Form an offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in downtown LA. Suns win. 112-95 over the Clippers. Started off dominant first quarter, winning 33-18. DeAndre Ayton only 13 points and 8 boards, coming up after he missed 2 clutch free throws in the game on Friday for a 113-111 loss to Portland. Despite Booker scoring 33 in Portland, he turns around and scores 35 points in 35 minutes against the Clippers. Highlight of the game, second assist. After Booker hit a 3 from a pass from Chris Paul, Chris Paul lobbed one up to Ayton for a slam. It was the 11,000th assist in the career of Chris Paul, and it was very fitting that it took place in Los Angeles at the Clippers, where he is still the Clippers' all-time assist leader. Head coach Monty Williams.
We had 13 offensive rebounds, and so that's something that tells me our guys are locked in and just in attack mode.
Crashing the boards hard. Up next, Suns take on the Warriors Tuesday night at home. ASU a loser 15-14. Those 15 points for Stanford, 5 field goals defeated the Sun Devils. Emory Jones, 14 of 25 for 227, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Despite the offense looking pathetic following the first quarter, coach said there was no thought of backup quarterback Trenton Bourget even getting a series.
I didn't because I didn't think Emory was playing bad. So I didn't. I try not to never second guess myself in those decisions.
Up next Saturday, Devils are on the road at Colorado. They'll be on ESPNU. Cardinals coach Cliff Kingsbury, happy.
I don't know if it'll set the tone, but to have that type of emotion and, you know, a Thursday night game and hadn't won there in a long time, you could definitely feel that we needed that type of momentum heading into Minnesota.
That's up next. Early kickoff, 10 o'clock in the morning, body clock wise for the Arizona Cardinals. They're in Minnesota. Vikings are actually the third best team in the NFC behind 5-1 Giants and 6-0 Eagles. Advantage Cardinals for coming off of their mini bye gets diminished by the fact the Vikings are coming off their bye weekend. Still to be determined is the fate of AJ Green, who didn't take a snap in Thursday night football's win against the Saints. And as of now, it looks like the rest of the receivers should be healthy for the Vikings. Coyotes a loser over to the weekend to Ottawa 6-2. Brady Tkachuk had 2 goals in the game for the Senators. Coyotes are off today. They're on the road in Columbus, Ohio, taking on the Blue Jackets tomorrow night, face off at 4. We're all set for the World Series, and it doesn't start until Friday. Phillies beat the Padres 4-3 to take that series 4-1. Bryce Harper has been pretty dominant in the playoffs. He went 2-for-4 yesterday with a dinger. ALCS is a sweep. Houston beats the Yankees 4-0 in games, 6-5 in game 4. Aaron Judge, only 1 of 16 against Houston pitching, and rookie sensation Jeremy Peña hit another home run yesterday, and he went 2-for-4. In the NFC West yesterday, Rams were idle. They host the 49ers this Sunday. San Francisco, they lost to the Chiefs at home 44-23. Seattle won against the Chargers. They're at home against the Giants next. That's first place 4-3 versus the second place New York Giants at 5-1. And finally, hopefully your day goes as well as Matt Betteridge last week. He was walking around specking in Queensland's gem fields in Australia. He said he saw a small glimmer sticking out of the dirt. When he reached down to grab it, he couldn't pick it up. After carefully removing the dirt around it, he pulled up an 834-carat sapphire. And he says he's not going to sell it, but keep it as a family heirloom. The gem's value? $12,000. Boy, now that was a weekend. Now that was a weekend. And I got to say right from the top, Mikey, I'm sorry. I planned on coming on Saturday, but I barely made it through the concert I promised to go to. Too much. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Whenever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. You have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises of one great American city, all that drops on your phone every weekday morning. We also cover ASU, GCU, and U of A, the Rattlers, the Rising, and the Merc. This is Doug Franz Unplugged.
Hey, not bad. Not bad. Not bad.
How was your day? How's your weekend? My weekend was pretty legendary. I'm a little embarrassed to say it. Drank way too much. I mean, it was obnoxious because I had a whole bunch of beers golfing with Mikey and Angel and Mark and everybody at Bell's Nashville Kitchen and Burrito Express. So it was a fantastic Friday. Fantastic. But then went out to dinner with two of the guys, Josh and Brian. And in going out to dinner, I did the dumb thing where you drink all kinds of beer all night. And then they took me out to different Chandler night spots where I was having old fashions mixed with my beer. And then that sent me over the top. And I was totally gone. Josh taught me how to break toilets at the Best Western. So that was exciting to learn that from him. And then got home and it was like, we're not doing anything. Saturday, I went to my daughter's concert. She had a concert. She sings in a choir at ASU. And it was supposed to be a long concert, but once she bailed, we bailed. And that's hard for my wife. You know, we go to those musical events. You're staying. You're there for the whole thing, whether your kid's playing or not. And I said, we're out of here. Like, I can't sit here anymore. I was college hungover. We're going home. And we were supposed to go to Mikey's wedding celebration, Bell's Nashville Kitchen, my guy, the original sponsor of Doug Franz Unplugged. And I bail. I totally bail. Like, hey, we're going home. I got to get to work, and I got to get a nap in here. But I recovered, and I'm back for you on a Monday, even though the podcast is a little late because I had to go to bed today. I took a long, like what you would call going to bed, but I just had to take a nap and lay down for a couple hours after trying to stay up all day watching games on Sunday after my Saturday. So that was completely immature and unprofessional. But hey, I had a great time. So if that's what matters, I had a nice weekend. Today, 1 o'clock, I'll be on 1580 The Fanatic. Please find time to make that part of your Monday. The main event is every day from noon to two on 1580 The Fanatic. But I'm really enjoying my time on it every Monday at 1 o'clock, and I'd love to have you be a part of it.
Doug's Big One.
I cannot believe just how bad Arizona State is screwing this thing up. And I totally understand your initial reaction to that is, how can you not believe it? How much ineptitude can happen before you start believing there's inept people there? I get it. But this is just getting, it's beyond ridiculous. Absolutely beyond ridiculous right now. Sean Aguano, I really want to root for you. I really want to root for you. But your decision-making in the Stanford game just absolutely makes no sense whatsoever. Stanford doesn't get a touchdown. They only get 5 field goals. ASU loses. Now, we talked about this last week. On the record, I told you, well, of course, everything I say is on the record now that you think of it. But I said, if you want to start Emory Jones because you think he's a better quarterback, you're the one at practice. You're the one that sees everything. You're the one that's in the meeting rooms. Fine. But I thought it was a terrible mistake to start Emory Jones based on you can't lose your job due to injury. That ridiculous, tired phrase that only means loser. That's all that does. You lose when that's what you think. And that's what ASU did. So Emory Jones plays, has an okay first half. Not great, but not terrible. He was awful in the second half. And then the thing that really shocked me is there's a clip of a delay of game. He walks off the field, walks right past Sean Aguano, who's trying to talk to him. Sean Aguano does not chase him down. So coach was the first one to get a lot of positive attention for discipline in sending guys out of practice if they show up late. And then you accept that level of disrespect? I don't understand that at all. So you had reason enough to go to Trenton Borgay just by the lack of quality snaps you were seeing from Emory Jones in the second half. And then you allow that to happen and don't go to Trenton Bourget there? Boy, that was bad. And I still got more on ASU because there's somebody else that's doing much worse than Sean Aguano. I'll get to that in a second, but let's talk about this game. The sound is terrible, but I think you're going to be able to make it out.
We weren't efficient enough on offense. Our defense did a great job, again, like you said, keeping them out of the end zone. 15 points should win football games. So am I disappointed? Yes, I'm very, very disappointed. But I got a team to make sure that I take care of, and so we'll get back at it. I told them right before I came here is I'll never give up on them. They have two ways to go. We can get better than we were this week, next week, or we can cash it in. And they all told me they're all in, and so I'll make sure that I'm there for them.
Number one, you've learned the lesson, always plug into the mold box, and clearly that's not happening. Number two, he says, they know I'll never give up on them. Well, Emory Jones gave up on you, coach. When a player walks by you with that level of disrespect, that means that player gave up on you. You can't let that happen at all. Big mistake. Coach was asked, what did you think of Emory Jones's performance?
I thought Emory's play was solid. You know, I'm going to go back and look at the progressions, look at his decisions. On some RPOs, I thought he did pretty well. He put the ball in places that we needed it to be, and receivers made some catches. You know, they're all going to miss some, but I thought he did pretty well off the cuff, but I have to go back and go and look at film.
Thought he did pretty solid, but he wants to go back and look at it. Jones was 14 of 25 for 227 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. In today's modern game of football, with all of the quick outs, tunnel screens, get the ball out, high completion percentage against a terrible football team. When you have only 14 completions, you did not have a solid game. And specifically the second half, you won that UW game because you correctly read you needed a spark. After a pretty bad second quarter and halfway through the third that it's abysmal, how did you not think you didn't need a spark then? You were losing to a team that couldn't hit field goals or couldn't get touchdowns. That was, I shouldn't say you were losing, they were coming back on you. And you decided to stick with Emory Jones? When Trent Bourget's already proven that he can do it. Now, granted, just because you drop Trent Bourget in, don't act like it means two automatic touchdowns ASU wins. We have no idea what Trent Bourget would have done. He could have walked in and thrown four picks, okay? Nobody knows what he would have done. But anybody in that situation that is making the tough decisions correctly, whether it be the production of Emory Jones or the disrespect of Emory Jones, you're going to make a move. And Coach Aguano said not only did he not make the move, he didn't even think about it.
I didn't because I didn't think Emory was playing bad. So I didn't. I try not to never second guess myself in those decisions. You know, that's what the outside world and the external world will always do, especially if you didn't get that win. But I told my guys that I'm going to make the best decision, I think, for them to win the football game. And we came up short. So I guess I'll take the blame for all of that.
Not good. Not good. Okay. Number one, you say you don't second guess. Well, what are you doing today? What did you do yesterday? And Sean, keep in mind, I really like you. But welcome to the shine, okay? Welcome to the spotlight here. And when you say that, you know, that the second guessing is for everybody else, you know, outside the program, there's nothing you should be doing on Sundays but second guessing. I mean, you should go over every single decision you make. There's one way to fix this. One. And if Sean Aguano doesn't do it today, I'm officially off a Sean Aguano bandwagon that I was never quite on, but I still respect him as a man greatly, and I hope he stays within the program if they name a new head coach. But if he doesn't start his press conference today by saying, I've made the decision after watching the film that Trenton Bourget is going to be our starter. If that isn't how the press conference starts, we know Sean Aguano's not the man for the job. He said in that quote that, I know it's a little hard to hear when they don't plug into a malt box. He said that he didn't make the change because he didn't think Emory Jones had done that bad. So that means that's the bar. Sean, I'm not trying to be a jerk to you, but think about what you just said. The bar now at Arizona State is not that bad. As long as everybody doesn't do that bad, they keep their jobs. Like, you can say, well, I didn't mean it like that. No, actually, yes, you did. That's exactly what you meant. I didn't think Emory Jones did that bad, so I left him in. It's exactly why head coaches make the money they do. Making a decision. Just like you did against UW. The decision against UW to bring in Bourget is a much harder decision than to bring him in against Stanford, because now you actually have a track record. You've seen it. And then you compound that with the Emory Jones disrespect. Listen, kids need to learn to mature, and it's hard. And I've even played for you Emory Jones sound a couple weeks ago where I thought, boy, that's a mature young man. That's awesome to hear. And I really liked it. I don't want to play more sound from ASU because it sounds so bad, but I was watching the Emory Jones press conference, and it was bad. There was zero leadership going on. Zero. And yes, you lead in press conferences too. By the things you say, by the way you carry yourself, by what you do. If you say, I'm just out there executing the plays, then you're blaming everybody else. And that's exactly what Emory Jones said. The only thing more appalling than the justification of the bad decisions is then what happens when I read an article in the state press. Full disclosure, I do not normally read the state press, but I do regularly read Kent Summers of the Arizona Republic. And Kent Summers put a link to an article in the state press in his article, and that's when I read it. And again, this is 400 times worse than anything Coach Aguano is doing. Dr. Crow is either clueless or dishonest. I'm talking about a man that's 400 times smarter than I am. I'm talking about a man that has done incredible benefits to our state, whether you like ASU or not. He's been an incredible economic driver for our state. And he is tremendous, in my opinion, at running a university. But I admit when I say that to you, I am the least qualified person to judge what it's like to run a university. I can judge running an athletic department. I cannot judge running an entire university. But to me, he does a great job for what little I know, except one area. The man has no idea what he's doing in athletics. It's to the point where the Board of Regents, you guys need to get involved. Okay, the hiring of Ray Anderson has just cost you a huge buyout of Todd Graham, and it's now cost you an over $4 million buyout of Herm Edwards. Who's paying that? You can say boosters all you want. You can say the athletic department budget all you want. You can try to swear up and down taxpayers aren't paying it. But that's back-to-back major, major buyouts as chosen by Ray Anderson, who is the hand-picked athletic director as chosen by Dr. Crow. And yet, where's the accountability? Here's what set me off in this article. We all know Sean Aguano has an opportunity to get the job. But here's a quote to the state press from Dr. Crow. If Sean wants to take a crack at the job, then you don't start hunting for the new coach now. You hunt for the new coach kind of at the end of the season. I've been doing this type of thing now for 30 years as a talk show host.
I'm seriously going to put that in the top 40 of dumbest sports quotes I've ever seen. Erasing all of the Yogi Berras. When I say erasing, I mean his don't count because they're fun. They're harmless. If he wants a crack, you don't start looking. That's why the word interim is in front of his name. You gave him the interim tag. That, again, clueless or dishonest. Either they are looking for coaches, either they are talking to people, either they have hired a search firm, either they are reaching out to agents. And Dr. Crow just lied when he says, well, you don't go looking around while you have him then. You wait till the end of the season. Then why fire Herm? Then just announce Herm Edwards won't be back next year. We're starting our search, but out of respect to Herm, we're going to let him finish the year. Or don't be a hypocrite and remove the title of interim. Take it off. If Sean Aguano gets to pretend to be a head coach because you don't want to look for another one, well, then take the interim tag off. That's why he's got the tag. That's just reckless. That's the only way to look at that quote. As if you don't care what any of your Arizona State fans think, what your customer base thinks, in a sense, your constituents. Do you really want them to believe you're not looking? That's almost shameful that you wouldn't be looking for a head coach right now. Or you are and you're just lying about it. Or you don't think you are and you don't even know what's going on underneath you. Like somebody else is looking and you're in plausible deniability mode. I didn't know that they were looking. I mean, really justify that comment, Dr. Crow. Again, unbiased, just let me read it. If Sean wants to take a crack at the job, then you don't start hunting for the new coach now. You hunt for the new coach kind of at the end of the season. Do you ever wonder why ASU sports are backwards? There's your answer. Matt Rhule is out there. Do I love Matt Rhule? I don't really know Matt Rhule, but I've seen what he did at Temple, which was a disaster, which has been a disaster for 40 years. And then at Baylor, you just came off of a horrific sexual harassment and football players raping college students and being covered up by the football team. That's what was going on. And Matt Rhule comes in there and cleans it up. And in 2 years, they're competing for Big 12 championships before he took the Carolina job. So here's one of two things are going on. Either you've spoken to Matt Rhule or Matt Rhule's representation. And that exposes Dr. Crow totally as being clueless. Or you haven't spoken to them and you're reckless. How do you miss out on this opportunity to hire or at least talk to someone the potential of Matt Rhule? Let me do some real-life reporting here on Doug Franz Unplugged. Oregon knocked off UCLA on another incredible game plan from Oregon's offensive coordinator, Kenny Dillingham. Chaparral grad, ASU grad. Oregon played in Tucson. You may be shocked to find out that Kenny Dillingham went to the game as the offensive coordinator of Oregon, having a game in Tucson. Zero people from Arizona State contacted him while he was there. Didn't want to get a beer, didn't want to get a glass of wine, didn't want to talk to him in his hotel room, didn't send anybody, hey, quick text, can I come up? Hey, by the way, I know you're in Tucson this weekend. Do you mind if we send a car over to you to pick you up and so we can take you over to this other location where nobody knows where we'll be? We just talk for a little bit. That did not happen, if you're wondering. That did not happen. So fine, you might argue, Doug, there's a lot of other secret ways to see somebody. Okay, well then do it. So right now at Arizona State, you've paid $4 million to get your head coach to go away. You haven't fired the athletic director who led the charge of this new model that was a disastrous failure and has now spent well over $8 million to get rid of football coaches. Your head coach currently allows a quarterback to dismiss him, walk by him on the bench and not talk to him without making a quarterback move on the spot. When at least if the quarterback is going to be disrespectful, can he be efficient? Can he be effective? He wasn't any of the three. And now we have a president who says we shouldn't look until the end of the season. That program's a mess, and it starts at the top. Dr. Crow, you're screwing this up. There's no other way around it. You're not good at athletics. Get a team together to hire a new athletic director and get out of that AD's way. And every day that goes by that Ray Anderson is the athletic director is another day you're screwing up the head coaching search. Somebody at that university, stand up and say, Dr. Crow, we're better at this than you. Somebody. Okay, before we get going any further, let me give you sound credits today. I got the tough-to-hear Sean Aguano sound from thesundevils.com. I got a lot of Cliff Kingsbury I'm going to play for you coming up after you hear from Rosati's and Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical from azcardinals.com. And I got the tough-to-understand Monty Williams sound from Bally Sports Arizona. Yeah, plug into the mop box or clean up the audio a little bit. I'll tell you about my frustrations in just a second. Coming up next, lots of Cardinals stuff and a nice bounce back game by the Suns. It's up next on Doug Franz Unplugged. Well, admittedly, I have a lot of work to do to improve Doug Franz Unplugged. I think we would both agree, and I want to get better and better at doing this. But the NBA has stopped making Zoom conferences mandatory. So when the Suns do it, basically because they care about the Unplugged Army. There's no other way to put it. They deserve a lot of credit, and I appreciate that. They still do Zoom conferences, therefore I can get the sound. Portland Trailblazers do not do it anymore. And therefore, the only sound I have from Monty Williams is what he told Bally Sports Arizona. And Bally Sports Arizona only plays one clip on their post-game show. So it's hard for me to get it. A little frustrating. I'm going to try to work on that and get something better. Here is Monty Williams after the game. Suns the winner, 112-95 in L.A.
I thought we came out with a get-in-your-way mentality tonight, and then we came out in the third quarter with the same thing. And then I thought our guys kept their poise. There were some fouls that could have gone our way. We didn't get the calls, and we just stayed with it. And then the thing that I'm looking at right now, and Kevin Young will be excited about it, we had 13 offensive rebounds. And so that's something that tells me our guys are locked in and just in attack mode. And I thought we played about as fast as we've ever played on offense.
There's a lot to look at with where he's going in that one. First of all, Friday night, Suns a loser, 113-111 to Portland. The apocalypse is coming. Portland and Utah are both 3-0 and on top of the Western Conference. And there's Utah's supposed to be a disaster in a rebuild, and Portland's supposed to be well below average. And they're 3-0. Ayton scored well in the Portland game. He had 26 points, but he got totally outplayed once again by a center. Nurkic went 20 points and 17 rebounds. So keep in mind, DA is now a max contract player. So there's all kinds of Ayton apologists that love to say how good he is and don't be so hard on DeAndre Ayton. That was the thought process, his rookie year, his second year, blah, blah, blah. Well, now that he's a max player, let's ask the question. Should an opposing player get 17 rebounds in a straight-up matchup against your max player? In my opinion, no, they should not. Should a max player miss two free throws when you're inside of 5 seconds to go in overtime, down by two? I don't think so. Has it happened in the history of basketball? Yes, it has. But for a man that told us in the offseason or at training camp that he was the only way for him to go is to just start dominating. And, you know, if Monty doesn't want to talk to him, he'll have to show him. Well, that's a fail. Then yesterday, in trying to come back from losing to Nurkic, he only went for 13 and 8. Luckily, the Suns had Booker, who had 35 points in 35 minutes. Luckily, I never thought I'd say this, they had Londale and Craig, who went for 19 rebounds in this game because DA was in foul trouble, and they were able to play that well and get the win. Now, I did love what Monty just said there about the officiating. The officiating in this league is just an embarrassment. I mean, just watching from the very beginning, you would think, okay, you've had a whole offseason to get better, and no, not even close. Not even close. And to me, that goes back to DA. I'm going to put it on Monty, too. Number one, never complain about officiating in the NBA because it's always terrible. Number two, how often do you see DA with a soft move around the paint? And then when he loses the ball, he throws his hands up in the air and swears up and down. And he gets fouled all the time. I don't understand why nobody on that bench, nobody in that organization, has ever told DeAndre Ayton, the reason why you don't get calls is because you don't go to the basket. If you would go to the basket, you would get calls. We could argue all day long whether that's fair. We could argue all day long, why does it matter? If he does a turnaround jump hook from 16 feet and gets fouled doing it, then why don't they call the foul? And you could argue, if he's going to the basket and gets fouled, why is that a foul and the other ones aren't? I have zero argument against your logic. You are right. That's how it should be. But I can tell you that's how it is not in the NBA. It's not like that. And it'll never be like that. So it's always been go to the hoop, draw contact, get fouls. If you're not aggressive and you do little tiny flipsy-doos, you don't get the calls. So because of that, everybody with the Suns likes to argue we're not getting the calls. But in truth, you're not putting yourself in the penalty. And a lot of refs kind of look at, you know what, I don't want to stop the game for that foul when it's not going to give you points anyway. You're not going to go to the free throw line for that, so let's just keep playing. When if DA would actually draw the fouls by being aggressive, if he was coached to do that, it's no longer DA's fault. The coaching staff has let him get away with it for 3 years. So you can't act shocked anymore that he does this. But he doesn't draw enough contact, doesn't get himself to the free throw line, and therefore you're getting into the bonus later in quarters, and you're missing out on sending Chris Paul and Devin Booker to the free throw line. By the way, something I've noticed in watching these games, I want to tell you I'm officially nervous about something. Is Chris Paul old or just not right? There's a very good chance he's just not right. Something's not quite right with the body. Something happened maybe in the offseason. I don't know. But every single shot of Chris Paul is coming up short. He is not the legendary mid-range player right now. He's not making that famous elbow free throw line extended jumper. They're 2-1. There's nothing wrong with you saying, Doug, it's 3 games. Okay? They've played 12 quarters of basketball, and Chris Paul has had double-digit assists. Everything's fine. Okay. But when you're at your freshest is the beginning of the year. So why doesn't Chris Paul look fresh right now? Why does he look just a step slow? Why is his jumper just a hair short. You know, if he was in a little slump and it's April, oh, he's tired, we'll be fine. You know? It's interesting because this whole year is designed of how do we keep Devin Booker and Chris Paul light on their feet and healthy in the postseason. If that's what you're trying to do all year and you can't even get it done in October, well, then what in the world's going to happen in April and May and June? I wouldn't say over the top concerned, but I would put me as watchful. It's now officially something I observe every game. Where's Chris Paul at right now? Where's he at in this game? Well, they take on Golden State coming up on Tuesday. I think it's something to watch. This is going to come as a shock to you. I've got a lot of compliments for Cliff Kingsbury. He doubled down on something that Kyler Murray had said Thursday night in his press availability before the weekend. So this is a little old. It goes back to last Friday. But it really grabs me because he deserves a ton of attention for it. He was asked about the amount of huddling the team did in Thursday night's win against the Saints and the fact that Kyler said that it was that it worked out.
Yeah, I think it helped having some new pieces in there. There's no doubt we want to slow things down, be able to identify where everybody's supposed to go. You saw at times we burned some timeouts getting late in the play clock, which we knew would be an issue for the first time actually doing it. But I felt like it was a positive. I think being able to change up some more fast-paced stuff and get in the huddle will help us moving forward.
Okay. There's a bunch of crap laden in good facts there. Just because you huddle doesn't mean you get delay of game penalties. Okay, that's stupid. I mean, that's really dumb. Well, we knew because we were going to huddle, we were going to get delay of game. Why? Why don't you get the play in sooner, break the huddle sooner, then you don't get delays of game? Right? So that part was kind of stupid. But I really thought it was brilliant to say, you know what, let's slow this down. And why? One of the other reasons is because Vance Joseph is doing a heck of a job this year. And if this defense is going to keep playing like this, rely on your defense and let them rest. And the way you let them rest is you quit doing three and outs in 45 seconds. You actually run the ball. You eat a little clock on the play clock. You make sure everybody has the play and you move forward. So to me, that's really good coaching on Cliff Kingsbury's part. And I am one that I think Cliff King, like everybody said, I think Cliff Kingsbury on the surface is a nice, humble dude. But being humble and having humility also means being able to say, I'm not good at something. And he can't do that. He would have given up play calling by now if he really was humble, as everybody likes to say that he is. But this is an area where you have to give him credit because his mantra is go, 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 go. Quick snap, quick snap, quick snap. And for him to acknowledge that's not the best for where this team is right now, that's a humiliating statement, I bet, for him. But to me, it's actually shows humility. And I think that makes them a better team right now. Another good sign. Boy, I'm full of compliments for the Cardinals. Give Steve Keim a lot of credit for the Cody Ford trade. Pro Football Focus says Cody Ford was fantastic at guard in his play-by-play grade.
Yeah, I thought he came in there and did a nice job. I mean, that's without practicing literally for whatever, 5 weeks, no pads, anything. And so got in there and knew what to do. And it was good to see him and Billy Price together. I mean, two guys who don't have a lot of time on task in our offense perform at a high level there late in the game.
Another compliment to Cliff is a theory that he came up with or a statistical analysis that he presented to the team that clearly worked. And that is a key to Thursday night football, which we know it's a key to every game, but listen to how he explains turnovers going into Thursday night football when he was just simply asked a question about how huge the pick sixes were, but how good the team has been overall in turnover margin.
played with great effort, not as clean as we would have liked in any phase, really, but I thought the effort was there. We talked before the game. Turnover margin was going to be huge. We did a stat. I think it was plus two teams on Thursday night were 85% win percentage, 63-11. We went plus three, so it worked out. But we have to be better moving forward, but I thought we made some critical plays when we had to.
If you got a chance to listen, especially to the tailgate show, but to any of the preparation shows of Doug Franz Unplugged last week for Cardinals and Saints, we talked about the stats in which the Saints are just destroying the Cardinals in about every single category. Saints were third in yards per rush. Cardinals are 15th, so average. Cardinals are the worst team in the NFL at yards per attempt in the passing game. Saints are better than average. Red zone touchdown percentage. The brilliance. Like, really, there's two areas where you can really see offensive genius. First quarter scoring and red zone touchdown percentage. Because you've got all week to prepare for what that defense does. That's first quarter scoring. Cardinals are dead last. And red zone scoring, touchdown percentage. Saints are sixth place. Cardinals are 20th. So clearly we're lacking in the offensive genius category that's been tagged to Cliff Kingsbury. Yet, the one stat I kept harping on, which was a shock at how vastly different it was, is the Cardinals came in the seventh best team in turnover margin and ended up plus three, and the Saints were number 32 coming into the game, the worst team in the NFL at turnover margin. And then you couple that with what Cliff is saying there, that really does matter. I mean, of course, every coach says don't turn the ball over. But how do you coach it? Do you really spend time coaching six-point technique on the football? Do you really spend time explaining to your quarterback risking turnovers on in this game is not worth it? Or in this part of the field is not worth it? Sure, you got to take shots every now and then. And that's taking chances. And anytime you take a chance, you could have a turnover. But what are you doing within that chance to minimize the turnover? How often are you saying, wait a minute, this just doesn't work. Let's just check it down. Keep the turnovers down. They did that. That was a strong coaching win. The no huddle situation, the general manager bringing in Cody Ford, the no turnover situation. That's one of those things where you've got to be impressed with Cliff. For me, I'm a little frustrated that why does D-Hop have to be here to make it look like this? I'm not talking about better. Of course it's going to be better with DeAndre Hopkins. But you went from total ineptitude, one of the worst offenses in football, if not the worst offense in football, to well above average with one guy? That's poor coaching to me to have that big of a jump. One player should not make that big of a jump. But Cliff Kingsbury obviously disagrees with me, as you will not be surprised.
If you look at like when he's played and he hasn't, I mean, that offensively it's pretty dramatic. And like I said, defenses have to play you differently. I mean, they just do. I mean, the run game opens up when they're rolling another guy to him. And I talked about him drawing the penalties. And, you know, he just sets things up for other people because they always got to know where he's at.
Penalties were a huge deal. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I forget already. But D-Hop drew about three penalties in the game. And just the worried looks of him create a lot of other opportunities to be able to get him the ball or get other people the ball. So he's creating penalties against them, which leads to like almost every, not all of them, but almost every defensive penalty is an automatic first down. So you give up the sacks that Kyler Murray sometimes takes. You give up the holding penalties that sometimes the O-line does. And then all of a sudden D-Hop draws a penalty and all that's erased and it's first and 10 again. He saves things. Or you do your horizontal hurry plays where Rondale Moore gets tackled 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So it goes from first and 10 to second and 14, and then D-Hop draws a penalty, and bam, you're back at first and 10 again. Those are not only enormous, they're undescribably important for this team to be able to kind of get out of its own way. And it is true that D-Hop does that. There's one more Cardinals topic that's really getting a lot of attention, and I kind of understand why, but it's not that big of a deal to me. And here's the comment to Cliff Kingsbury is, AJ Green did not even play for a snap in the game against the Saints. What's his role going forward?
Yeah, we're going to work through that. I mean, with all these pieces now, it's going to be a challenge for us to maximize who we have and you know, see what we can get out of the personnel groupings that we have. But we'll spend the next, 8 or 9 days going through it and see what we come up with.
Sounds like Eagle. When you say it like that, we're going to spend the next 8 or 9 days going through it. Well, that just means you're having conversations or building up the moments and things like that. I actually, unless he's a malcontent, I wouldn't get rid of him. Now, obviously, if there's anybody out there that's actually going to trade you anything of value, go for it. But I wouldn't release him unless you're afraid he's going to be a problem. And the reason why I say that is, listen, it wasn't like the Cardinals signed AJ Green to a long-term contract extension at the end of last year. It's not like he dramatically affected your salary cap in the middle of March free agency because you jumped and felt like you had to have him. This guy was signed late in the offseason because he knows your system. That's always a good signing if you think a guy can still play. And it's not like his salary cap really cost you another player. You know, that's when you look at a free agent as a disaster. So is AJ Green an NFL player anymore? I don't really think so. I don't think he's good enough to be in the NFL. But are you 100% sure all of the Cardinals players are going to remain healthy? Unless AJ Green just throws an absolute fit, I'm keeping him on the team and I'm making him inactive every game. Or letting him just sit there and rot unless somebody gets hurt and then we'll put you back in. I think that's what's best. He gives you quality depth. Now, if he gets to be a problem, of course get rid of him. There's no point in holding on to a malcontent AJ Green. And if you didn't know the way the contract works for a veteran, once you get past game one, your contract for this year is guaranteed. So he's getting his money. And I don't even think you're getting a seventh round pick for him. I'm sure Steve Keim is calling around to see, hey, is there anybody that will give us anything for AJ Green? Heck, maybe the Bengals take him back for just the end of the season for sentimental reasons. I don't know. I don't think anybody's really going to jump on the chance to get AJ Green. I think he's actually a good person, so I'm not worried about the malcontent aspect of it. And he provides depth. So a lot of people are kind of making out the AJ Green thing to be hilarious. Oh, he's gone. Oh, he's terrible. He's, you know, and all. Okay. I'm not defending AJ Green. He has been terrible. But, I mean, you're already paying him. It's a sunk cost now. Might as well keep him. Coming up next, time for a little versus Vegas. Didn't do well last weekend, but didn't do terrible. It's next. Presented by KingCappers.com. On Doug Franz Unplugged. It's time for
Versus Vegas.
At the end of every Doug Franz Unplugged, you get Versus Vegas presented by KingCappers.com. Go to KingCappers.com. And you can also follow them at Cappers_King. And they even slip out some free plays on Twitter every now and then just to prove their worth to you. And then you go to KingCappers.com and they are not your sports book. You do not gamble through them. They're like a broker. They're like an investment banker in which they teach you what are the best plays that are out there through their advanced analytics. You pay them for their plays. You make their plays. You make money. That's how things work for KingCappers.com. They gave you two free plays on a double barrel Friday. Went 1-1 on their two plays. So I'm sure Jerry's a little frustrated about missing the college game, but he crushed his NFL pick of choosing the Lions as big losers and the Cowboys covering the spread. No free play today, though, but I'll give you mine. And here's what I did over the weekend. I went 4-3. Not terrible, but not good. Really frustrated by how confident I was on Clemson covering the 13.5 and not getting it against Syracuse. They only won by 6. But I nailed my Bobcats, nailed Oklahoma State over Texas, and annihilated the famous Papa Bear Sean on Penn State, 45-17 winners over Minnesota. I did not like that line at all. Thought that was bad. So I went 4-3. My record is now 559-502 since we started Doug Franz Unplugged versus Vegas, now presented by KingCappers.com. Tonight, I like 3 games tonight. One of them I'm sticking my neck out pretty far, I admit. Okay, I got the Denver Nuggets on the road at the undefeated Portland Trailblazers. And I'm going to take Denver -4.5. Portland just played a game against the Lakers. You know Portland's got to feel good about themselves. And I think Denver's going to come in and smack them pretty good on the back end of a back-to-back. So I like Denver -4.5. Minnesota just won in overtime, and they had to fly all the way back home. San Antonio is not good, but they're getting 8.5 when Minnesota just had a long flight after an overtime game. I, of course, think Minnesota's going to win, but I'm going to take San Antonio plus the 8.5 coming up after a back-to-back. And lastly, NFL-wise, I like the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots going under 40.5. I don't like either of these offenses very much. I would like to get it up. I would like the over-under to be a little higher on that total, but I'm going to take those two under. So I got Denver -4.5, Spurs +8.5, but I'll never root for the Spurs, so still rooting for Minnesota. And Bears, New England, under the 40.5. Hopefully you like today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged with not as much sound. It's not nearly as long, but I hope you still felt like you got all the coverage that you wanted of our major sports franchises and of our college teams. Coming up tomorrow, I got a lot to do tomorrow, a lot of Cardinals to do, and a little bit of a preview of this huge Golden State game coming up, and a lot of U of A ASU sound to go over. We're going to have a busy day tomorrow. Please do me a favor and listen. Thanks to Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. 602-2-REPAIR is their phone number. Thanks to Rosati's, Bell's, and Burrito Express, who are our restaurant sponsors. Rosati's is at Ray and McQueen, and they are great sports bar, pizza, and wings and beer. Bell's Nashville Kitchen, nobody combines bar and restaurant better than Bell's Nashville Kitchen. You walk in and you think, well, this is a bar. It's a nice bar, but there's no way there's good food. And then you have their incredible food, and you think, there's no way I'm still at a bar. It's fantastic. And Burrito Express, oh my goodness. I had it Friday morning. Delicious. Breakfast burrito or the burrito supreme, my favorites. This is just fantastic. And if you are ever thinking, you know what, I'd like to kind of learn about doing a podcast, then just contact my friend Yoda, the original producer of the old show. Just go to @FooShawMedia, or all you have to do is just send me a tweet or an email, and I'll get you in touch with Yoda, and FooShaw Media will help you with your podcast. Have a great Monday. Don't let anybody else tell you it's a case of the Mondays. Dominate your Monday, because you're in the Unplugged Army. I'll see you tomorrow.